From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
You're listening to Money Talk for the 4th of July long weekend. The Brew Crew is in Pittsburgh for the holiday, and the Bucks, leading the Eastern Conference Finals 3-2, head to Atlanta for Game 6 on Saturday night. Well, we were going to get there anyway, so let's start with Florida. A Floridian was charged with drinking while driving. His defense was that he only drank at stoplights. Okay. A woman checked her bank account after a shopping spree and discovered that she's in debt to the tune of $49 billion. I think that's probably just a bookkeeping error, unless she's the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos. A little girl in New Zealand was playing Tiddlywinks and got one of the discs stuck up her nose. Forgotten about for 37 years, it was recently discovered after she got a COVID-19 test. She's breathing a lot easier now that it's been removed. Customers who visit Ralph's Tavern in Worcester, Massachusetts, can pay the $5 cover with Monopoly money. You can use the funny money to pay for everything but alcohol. But if you do try to buy a drink, you go directly to jail. You do not pass go, and you do not collect $200. Finally, our headline of the week. Man with pocket full of drugs claims pants aren't his. Okay, buddy. Around the table today, we've got Art Rothschild, Paige Radke, Joel Driesing, and with a look back at the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. A good week overall. The NASDAQ up 1.9% this week, closing today at 14,639. The S&P 500 up 1.7%, closing today at 4,352. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1%. Closing at the bell at 34,788. That's up 154 points today. For the year, the Dow Jones up 14.7%, including dividends. The S&P up 16.7%, including dividends. And the NASDAQ up 14%, also including dividends. A quick look at the week. It's a great opportunity, as always, at the end of a quarter to kind of take stock of where we've been. I think second quarter in particular now in the books, another exceptional quarter for investors. A lot of reasons to think that we should maybe be encouraged about the direction we're headed as well. You know, what kinds of takeaways do you have from the second quarter in the books?
Yeah, I like the second quarter better than the first, if we can pick one. But it's been a fascinating year. In the first quarter, it was all about worry, fear, inflation, what the Fed might do. And there was this rotation going on, of course, to value stocks from growth stocks. The second quarter started, it's a whole different world. It's like the market has grown accustomed to what the Fed is telling us is going on, which is they stand ready to raise rates if and when necessary, but they'd rather not until we have an acceptable level of employment and an appropriate level of inflation. And so in the shifting sands to growth stocks, had a wonderful second quarter, so that was nice. And it's tremendous to look at what I'm going to refer to as the wall of worry that this market has climbed. And so the reviews we're doing, daily with clients, they're pleased as punch with a year in which the news is good and the market is reflecting, the good concurrent economy. And I think the expectations are very good, going forward. So I think it's a great time to be an investor. It's a great time to be an advisor. So I just feel good right now.
Yeah, Art, you mentioned the Fed, and clearly I think that's been the major focus recently. I think what's interesting about the second quarter is that the first quarter we were fighting interest rates that had risen pretty drastically. The second quarter, it was kind of the reverse of that. We saw things stabilize, even come down a little bit. And so I think a reminder for investors that you didn't need to run away from your bond funds just because there was a prospect of a little bit higher rates. If anything, I think we got a reminder that despite the fact that the economy can look stronger, that markets can look stronger, it doesn't necessarily mean that rates have to go higher. And so we saw a little bit of benefit from our bond funds. Paige, as you look at the second quarter, things that stand out to you?
Yeah, so similar to what Art already brought up, but just looking at the difference between growth and value. And I feel like this is something that we talk about all the time, and ultimately our answer is always the same, is you want to have a little bit of both. But it's just interesting to see those dynamics play out in the market. We had that rotation in the first quarter where small caps and value were really outperforming relative to large cap overall and growth in particular. Now, looking at the second quarter, nearly all of growth's performance this year came in that second quarter. And we saw the value side and the small cap continue to run into some issues. One thing just overall in that space, looking large cap versus small cap, just a reminder that those Russell indexes do get rebalanced. So they are not static. They're not something that's set in stone. And that rebalance did happen last week, Friday. So usually when those hit, you tend to see a pretty substantial change sometimes, depending on how those indexes look like. And this time we did see some of those the meme stocks make the jump from the small cap to the large cap. We saw it, particularly AMC, you know, not something that we're looking at particularly, is now the largest company in the small cap index. So just watching those dynamics and seeing how fund managers are adjusting to those changes is going to be something I'm keeping an eye out on.
Yeah, Paige, I certainly appreciate the challenges that indexes face. You know, based on rules and how they're constructed, they have to, by their very nature, change the allocation based on some trends that have been going on that maybe aren't reflective of the broader opportunity set, right? And so you talk about meme stocks, or you talk about some of those high flyers that maybe aren't worth what a lot of people are willing to pay for them right now. And all of a sudden, if you're a manager of a fund that's supposed to look like a larger cap index, the pool or the pond that you're fishing out of looks a little different today than it did last week. And so I think it provides some more opportunities, certainly, but it also provides some more challenges, some more things to be aware of. It's why we continue to pay a lot of attention to the things we own. We continue to pay a lot of attention to just what ponds our managers are fishing from, because there are so many ways that can go wrong if you aren't paying very close attention. You know, I think you talk about risk and you talk about, you know, how far the markets have come from here. And yet, Art, I think, you know, you're fond of saying that there is some pretty significant support. When you look at any number of measures of support for the market, and a variety of markets, really, I think, you know, some of the big ones are just the significant improvements we've seen in earnings. The earnings forecast for the second quarter call for an increase year over year of as much as 60% or more. And I think that's a pretty substantial number when you consider just how significantly down earnings had been. More importantly, when you look at things like measures of how corporate bond investors view risk and what kinds of potential default risk are out there, the spread on high yield bonds, which I think is a pretty good measure for how much bond investors think the corporate market is in trouble, the spread on high yield bonds is as low as it's been since before the financial crisis. Forget, you know, I think that the period leading up to this last recession, but even since before the financial crisis. And so I think plenty of reasons to be happy about the direction we're headed from here, plenty of reasons to think there's some support for stocks.
Yeah, historically, I think the recovery that we're currently having is virtually unprecedented. Investors in the first quarter, of course, were quick to think about inflation back in the 70s or 80s. I don't think we're going to have anything like that. And then investors like to refer back to the tepid recovery we had after the Great Recession. And I think a big difference this time is the amount of fiscal support for the economy. We have trillions of dollars that's been provided by Congress. It's still out there. It's still being distributed. It's still being applied. We have corporations now making significant capital expenditures. So even though we definitely have a shortage of workers, which will probably cause the prices to go up as we're paying those workers more, we will get some inflation, which we've attributed to, you know, temporary factors. I think the additional corporate spending, you know, capital expenditures are going to drive stocks higher, or should. And not to mention, which you're probably going to mention anyway eventually, is this is earnings season. And so these forecasts of higher earnings that we've had quarter after quarter have been, you know, we've just blown through those numbers. So I'm fully expecting, and I think investors are expecting, very positive earnings, exceeding expectations this quarter, with some very favorable commentary on what lies ahead. I think we're at the very beginning of our emergence from the great pandemic, so to speak. And so and not to mention the money that's out there. Trillions of dollars, never been as much money out there, and the wealth effect, which we haven't had to talk about in decades. People are wealthier than they ever have been before. And so anyone who hasn't been an investor to this point has missed out. They don't have to rush back in, but you know, people with well-diversified portfolios are benefiting. The wealth effect is continuing. So I'm not going to say it's without anything we're without anything to worry about, but I think the positives stack up very favorably against the negatives going forward.
Well, and Art, I'm happy that you brought up the wealth effect, because that's one thing, you know, that we've heard a lot about is rising wages. And is that going to lead to inflation? And what is the outcome going to be? But ultimately, if we're going to have inflation, where do we want it to come from? It's rising wages, because people are wealthier. Businesses sure are going to pass those rising costs on to the consumers. But if you have inflation with no wage growth, that's a problem. But when we have inflation along with those growing wages, suddenly it is that wealth effect where people are becoming wealthier, they're spending more money, they're being more active in the economy. And so ultimately, if we see inflation due to that, it's not something that we should really be that worried about. And that's long term. So the rising prices are short term, but those wage increases, those stick around.
Yeah, I think we need to remember that the Fed is more concerned right now about the labor market than they are about the potential for a little bit of inflation. And I think that's reflected in your comments page, that the real issue isn't so much a little bit of inflation. The real issue is if economic growth doesn't accompany that inflation. And so if you put the money in the hands of the people who will spend it, you allow it to accelerate through the economy. Joel, a conversation you and I were having earlier today, this concept of velocity, right? How quickly does money get through the system? Is a dollar that's spent by one person then spent by another person and another person, or does it just sit? And wage inflation is one of those wonderful things where the people who tend to feel it most also are the people who are going to be spending it. And so a little bit of an increase on the bottom side of the wage curve on those lower earners tends to mean that there's a pretty significant economic impact. They spend it quickly, it gets to other people who spend it quickly, as opposed to just kind of sitting out there.
And Kyle, I think that the numbers that Art was referring to about fiscal spending, the money that Congress has been putting out in the economy, a lot of that has been going to people who will spend it right away. The unemployment benefits, we've seen that in the news a lot lately, and you know, there were extra benefits. There were people who were covered by unemployment insurance who weren't covered otherwise, and supplements, $300 a month supplements for some people. And I think a lot of that money has helped the economy recover so far. And if I may, I mean, so we got the numbers today on the jobs report for June, and some of those numbers actually help illustrate how the economy is reopening. There's a number, so they're asking extra questions of people who were unemployed or the household survey. This last month in June, there were 6.4 million people who were out of the labor force. That means that they otherwise would have been either working or looking for a job. They weren't doing either. 25% of them, or 1.6 million people, said that they weren't looking for jobs because the pandemic was preventing them. You know, whether it was because it was an industry that wasn't opened yet, or they had somebody at home that they needed to take care of and they couldn't, you know, go look for work, or you know, they were concerned about their own health, whatever. So it was 1.6 million. The month before, in May, that 1.6 million was 2.5 million. So 2.5 million said that the pandemic was preventing them from looking for jobs. And go back to December, and that was 6 million. So you can sort of see just from that one statistic how the economy is opening back up again.
Yeah, we've absolutely been talking about confidence as one of the critical pieces of economic recovery, right? That you have to feel confident that you're not going to get sick when you go out and do the types of activities, but that's also an employment issue, right? That you need to be confident that your workplace is safe. You need to be confident that you're not going to get sick traveling to and from. If you're taking the bus, if you're taking the train, those are all, you know, I think critical factors in whether or not you want to be looking for work right now. And so, you know, I get it, right? That the more the vaccine rolls out, the more that we start to see numbers continue to come down in terms of infection rates, people are going to start to feel more confident about getting back out there, finding a job if they don't have one, or even changing jobs to take advantage of the opportunities that are out there.
I have a friend who's a barber, and he talked to me, this is a couple of months ago, but he said that he was horrified. He actually was having, he was very nervous because he was dealing with customers who wanted beard trims, and he just wasn't ready for that. He actually had suffered from COVID and you know, got very sick, and here he is dealing with strangers, you know, taking their masks off, and he was actually considering going into another line of work, becoming an office worker, where he wouldn't have to put up with that sort of thing. And Art, you had mentioned before about the shortage of workers, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure, you know, and I think some economists would beg to differ with that term, because I think it's more of a fluctuation right now among workers and among the jobs that are available for them and, you know, within the circumstances of their lives. So, you know, we do have sort of, it seems like we've got a lot of workers who aren't working, and we also have a lot of jobs and employers who are saying we can't get the workers to fill these jobs. And it's going to be interesting as these months go on to see how that all straightens out, whether the employers change the jobs or change the way they're filling the jobs or change the way they're doing their business so they don't need as many workers, and you know, how the workers who aren't working, or even those who are and want to switch jobs, how they change.
A lot of this is existing unemployment, but even the initial claims front this week, we saw initial claims for unemployment fall to its lowest level since last March, and I think that's a significant shift as well, Joel.
Yeah, and remember, a lot of the pandemic assistance that was put onto the unemployment system, that a lot of that is coming off in September. So, you know, out of the nearly 15 million people who were claiming unemployment last week, something like 11.2 million of them were through claims that are tied with these new programs that are going to be ending soon. So we're going to be seeing very soon, you know, some changes there and what happens with those people.
On the consumer confidence front, we got some, I think, continued encouraging news that consumers remain fairly optimistic about the road ahead.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting because they're expressing, this was the monthly look that the conference board does on consumer confidence, and consumers are saying that they're worried about inflation, that they, not worried so much, but they're expecting higher inflation. Among all the things that they're reading and experiencing, but they're not worried about it. They're, you know, there's this still this pent up demand. They're saying that they're still going to buy cars if they can find them. they're gonna travel, and they're gonna buy houses if they can find them. And the inflation isn't going to be keeping them from doing that.
And Joel, anecdotally speaking, and this is, you know, somewhat related, but just something interesting to point out is in that conference board review, one of the things that they noted was the spread between people who identify as Democrats versus people who identify as Republicans. Now, this is not to make a political statement by any means, but typically around election cycles, we get a lot of questions about what's going to happen if this person wins or that person wins. And what they noted is that pre-election, the confidence numbers were pretty much around the same. But after the election, they just saw them flip between what Democrats were saying and what Republicans are saying. And so in a situation right now where our country is extremely polarized, I just think it's important to remember that what we tell clients, that 50% of people are going to be happy and 50% of people are going to be upset, is actually playing out in the numbers. And so we're seeing that happen right now. And so I guess my point is it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you stand on. We're all the same economy, and people are happy and people are spending, and that's what we want to see.
That's right, Paige.
Half of us are always going to be happy one way. The other half are always going to be happy the other. I think that the other important point of that, of course, is that most of our purchasing decisions aren't dependent upon whether or not we're happy about who's in office. And so, you need a new house, you need to change your apartment, you need to go get a fridge or a range or whatever it is. You don't do that because Trump won or Biden won or whoever won. You do it because that's what you need to do or that's what you want to do. And so, yeah, there's certainly some extremes where maybe you go, yeah, I don't want to make that purchase right now because I don't want to support this candidate. And I think there certainly are some people who might want to vote that way with their dollars. But for the most part, you got to still live your life. You still have to make those purchases. And so the economy ultimately isn't all that dependent upon who the president is or who's in power, at least as much as we'd like to believe.
Not only that, it's going to be very interesting to see the further along we get in this recovery where everyone's benefiting, whether or not we can get everyone agreeing that, oh, this is a tremendous recovery. We do feel wealthier. We are more optimistic. So it'll be very interesting to see how those polls might change as we move along, in the current expansion.
Joel, we've got a newsletter going out this afternoon. I think some good content, as always, but, in particular, some introductions for a new employee, some reminders, I think, about some of the firm policies on coming into the office. And again, if a reminder for our listeners, happy to invite individuals that have been fully vaccinated back into the office for in-person appointments. I think it's been a big step for us to be able to offer those services again. Not that we couldn't do what we needed to do from home, but being able to see those folks that are that have been fully vaccinated, I think, is a pretty good thing. Beyond that, stuff that stands out for you from the newsletter?
I actually like the article that you offered. It was a look, and I take it that it's based on some feedback that you're getting from clients or that you're hearing around the office. But it's a nice perspective on people's individual portfolios, how you can look at the money that you have invested and set aside, and you kind of have an idea of what that is. But then you read the headlines, you hear the stories, you hear, talk about what's going on in the economy, the meme stocks and whatnot. And you kind of wonder, so how's my portfolio affected by that? How's my portfolio reflected by that? And I thought that was a good piece that you had to give some perspective on that.
It's the only reason I asked Joel is because I was fishing for that compliment. But I think it's important for investors to know where what they have fits into these conversations. And some of that is, having a meeting with your advisor and understanding, okay, here's what I have. And some of it is understanding that, okay, there might be some reasons why you don't want some of these things or why you want them in far smaller quantities than what you might otherwise think. I think a big one that stood out for me is just a follow-on to a conversation that Dave Sandstrom had on the podcast a week or two ago, just reminding folks to look at beneficiaries. And there was a good article today in the Wall Street Journal, I think, that fits nicely with that, talking about how there's $35 trillion of net worth in the U.S. population above the age of 70. And when you start to talk about, okay, well, what's the impact of that much money sitting in an age bracket of the population, it makes those beneficiary conversations far more important. The vast majority of that wealth is going to be bequeathed to beneficiaries. It's not going to be spent by those individuals. It's not going to be gifted within their lifetimes when you look at the typical trends. And so I think, one, a strong reminder to have that conversation about your beneficiaries, but two, maybe a reminder to talk about how you might want to try to spend some of that money in your lifetime. That's certainly a big part of what we do as planners. The planning piece of this is how much can I spend and what do I want to spend it on, whether it's taking a trip with the kids and grandkids while you're still around or whether it's finding organizations that you want to give to. I think those are all big parts of the conversation.
Art, I remember you once telling me that's like the biggest thing that you do is to help people spend the money they
have. And I learned that from Bob to begin with. Most folks don't know, how much they can spend. And so the first thing we want to do is when we sit down with our clients is say, look, this is how much money you have. This is how much you can afford to spend. And the irony is that most of our clients got wealthy by not spending. And so you have to teach them to spend. And it works over time.
And Joel, you've got a good article on cyber fraud. I think a reminder of just how close to home those hit. Just before I came into this podcast, I got a notice that someone logged into my HBO Max account and tried to change my password. And so I've got a little bit of work ahead of me to get that changed when I get out of here. But I think it's a good reminder, as always, for investors that you want to keep a close eye on passwords. You want to keep a close eye on logins. Know what you have login information for and make sure that those passwords are unique. Make sure that you're using two-factor authentication or multi-factor where you can. But also that there can be a bit of a journey to trying to solve some of those problems once they start.
Yeah, and it's a journey that all of us experience one time or another. I hope not, but I mean, but you know, I'm sort of prepared to have to face that again. And I include some tips from Jason that he had given, and we've actually got a series of videos on our website that goes through a lot of those tips.
If you're not subscribed to our newsletter, I'd encourage you to reach out and get subscribed. There's an incredible wealth of information available each month from that. Joel puts a lot of work into getting that together, along with help from the rest of our staff. And so I think a really important resource to make sure that you're, as a listener, up to date on the kinds of things we're talking about. Well, we enjoyed doing the program. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.